Hey friends, Pastor Josh Blevins here. Another episode of The Shepherd's Voice, where we seek to bring the true voice of Jesus into a chaotic and confusing culture. And we have been doing this series with some of the gubernatorial candidates running for governor of the state of Missouri in the upcoming August 6th primary. And we were blessed today to have Jay Ashcroft, the current Secretary of State here in the state of Missouri, with us here today. And Jay and I got to talk about his faith journey, as well as some of his plans and ideas for the state of Missouri as he runs for governor. So enjoy this interview that I got to do with him, and we'll look forward to seeing you guys next time that we're together. Well, Secretary Ashcroft, thank you so much for joining me today. It's a pleasure to have you on here.
Well, thanks for having me. Great to talk to you.
Yeah. So you're in the middle of a campaign leading up to this primary election that we're going to have on August 6th. And you've been traveling the state of Missouri. And it's really great that you could come in and talk to us a little bit about what I'd like to just chat about is initially your own journey of faith. I don't know much about you as in regards to your own faith, but I'd love to hear a story of maybe how your journey of faith has led you into your involvement in our state and in the government, and how that has affected you and driven you to what you're doing today.
Well, kind of combining those two, I grew up in politics, but I also grew up in a Christian home, which sometimes people would say Christian and politics, those don't mix. Mm. They seem to be very different worlds, but they should. You know, when I grew up, people said you shouldn't talk about politics and you shouldn't talk about religion. Yeah. But those are the things that matter. Politics matters for the here and now. Mm-hmm. And religion, although it's better to put relationship with Christ, sure, matters for eternity. And I was blessed to grow up in a Christian home. My grandfather, my great-grandfather were both missionaries and pastors. Some people would say, how'd you go from pastor to politician? That doesn't seem to be in the right direction. But luckily, I was raised with a family that taught me about the fact that we are all inherently sinful and that we are in need of a Savior. Now, really, there's only two types of people in the world. There are the sinners, and there's the sinners saved by grace. We're all sinners.
It's true.
But we need the grace of God. Mm-hmm. You know, the Bible says that we cannot please God apart from His Spirit working within us.
Yeah.
So I was blessed at a young age. Actually, I still go to church with the couple, the lady that was my Sunday school teacher.
Wow.
When I bowed beside my chair in Sunday school to ask God to take my life and lead me. Something that, frankly, I have to continually do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I really wish that sanctification was a snapping of God's fingers and it went from not done to done as instead of the process, mm-hmm, because He's still working on me. But I'm thankful that He is faithful and that I can be transformed and a new creation, mm-hmm, by His Spirit in me. Mm-hmm. So that's really kind of where I come from. Why do I want to be involved in government? I think part of it is because I believe, I saw what my father was able to do, but I rejected that, said I'm going to be an engineer, I'm going to have a real job. But I also was taught by my father to be consequential. And I think that's what God calls us to be. Hmm. I think every one of us was made in the image for a purpose.
Yeah.
And it wasn't to be a bump on the log. Hmm. And I found that being in government, being a public servant, I can be consequential. I can make a difference in people's lives. Government will never bring salvation. The best we can hope for is that government will quit being so stupid and incentivizing people to act badly. Mm-hmm. But to truly make a difference, that's the Holy Spirit working in people's hearts.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, maybe this will transition into a topic that seems to be more on the forefront today, even than more than it has been in times past. We live in pretty divisive times. But we hear a lot about the separation of church and state. And with the Johnson Amendment in the 50s, really in my opinion, seeking to silence the voice of the church and the unified church from being involved in making a difference. We get that leftist language thrown at us a lot of like, the church's role is in the area of faith and they don't have the right to speak into or endorse or to encourage people to vote their values. And to me, it's really more of an agenda to silence what could be a very powerful force for change in the world. What is your thought on even some of the lawsuits now of the IRS wanting to potentially revoke 501c3 statuses, nonprofit statuses, based on some of these churches being willing to speak out on the issues?
Well, a couple of things. One, there are a couple of legal pro bono firms that have pretty much just said, as a pastor, you speak out, send your message to the IRS, and if they ever come after you, we'll protect you for free.
Yeah.
And I don't think they've ever lost. But as maybe a more important matter, you know, the book of James talks about faith, talks about works, and says faith without works is dead.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different ways to take that, and I won't get into that theological disagreement. It'd be fun to talk about. Yeah. But if you truly believe something, if you truly believe that there is an eternal, always existent I am that has said, this is how you should live, and if you don't live this way, you're going to end up going down this path, and it's not good. Mm-hmm. If you believe that, if you truly believe it, how can you be silent about it? Mm. It's not loving to be silent about that.
Right.
But with respect to the Constitution clearly says that the government is mm-hmm. not allowed to have an established religion. Mm-hmm. It in no way stops people of faith or religious entities, religious individuals from getting involved in government. And we I touched on it briefly earlier, I think before we started the cameras rolling, the idea of Nathan and David.
Yeah.
The biblical guide for believers is to be involved, to be the salt of the earth.
Yeah. Prophetic
That's
voice.
To be in the middle. And I believe we are where we are as a country because too many pastors have decided that they're going to be downstream of culture. Because they're afraid of scaring people away, instead of willing to confront and be upstream of culture and actually do what's beneficial and helpful for people. We do not love people by enabling or allowing them to do things that are self-destructive. Mm-hmm. And as people of faith, an unwillingness to speak the truth to those that are in danger of perishing is allowing destructive behavior. Mm. And we are called to be emissaries of God. And look, the Bible said that the world wouldn't always love us, that the world would hate us.
Yeah.
Because the world is in enmity with Christ.
Yeah.
But we need to follow his example. He came to seek and save those which were lost. We need to do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, the Bible speaks about righteousness exalts a nation. Sin is a reproach to any people. And if we say we love our neighbors, how could we stay silent in regards to having the opportunity to help create laws that bless or curse them and picking people that have their best, truly their best interests in mind, even in the sight of God? So I appreciate that perspective.
When I talk to pastors that are concerned about getting in trouble for what they say at the pulpit, I tend to like to remind them of what it says. It says where the Lord, in Isaiah that the word of the Lord shall never return void, but shall always accomplish that whereunto it is sent.
Yeah.
Are you scared of the IRS more than you're scared of not doing what God is calling you to do and not fulfilling the mission he's sent you to do?
I think one of the tactics of some of the left in our country is the fear tactic, is the intimidation factor. I'm currently being sued right now by a local LGBTQ activist who was part of the library board because I stood up and I said, I don't think drag queen shows and drag queen reading hours should be part of our public spaces and exercise that First Amendment right, which has ignited a really militant attack against us on every level, a lot of intimidation. As in your role in government, as you've been the Secretary of State, you did some work in coming and holding libraries accountable for the content. Could you speak to, as a future governor, what your role would be and the steps you would take to protect the minds of children, both within our public schools, within our public spaces, and even with the tone of our culture and the things we're pushing, how can what can you do and the state do to have a moral responsibility there?
Well, I think the first thing I would say is I don't trust the state to protect the moral well-being of children. I don't. And I guess that will surprise some people. But I do expect that parents should have that ability to make those decisions for their children. I mean, those children were put in trust in their care by God for them to raise in the honor and admonition of the Lord. I want to get government out of the way of parents being able to make those decisions. I saw what was happening in libraries in other states, really didn't realize that we had a lot of the same problems in Missouri at the time, was hoping to avoid them. That's why I put out the rules and tried to work with the legislature to make sure that parents would be in charge, that they would be in charge of what their children were getting or seeing at libraries. Not saying that parent A is in charge of what every child deals sure. with, but parent A is in charge of what their individual children are allowed to get. Also making sure that no Missouri taxpayer, at least that the money that comes through my office, because that's what I control, you should never have to worry that that money is being used for pornographic or obscene materials in libraries. That's just not the place mm-hmm. of libraries. And also to make sure that libraries give out information about anything that's occurring at the library so parents can make an informed decision about what they want to do. It's gotten so bad that when we put out that rule, we had almost 20,000 people that told us it was wrong to be empowering parents to make the decisions about their own children. The Missouri Library Association actually said that librarians know better than parents what's good for children, and essentially parents should shut up and just let the librarians take control. Obviously, we ignored the libraries. We made sure the rule went into effect and that parents would be in charge. And the very libraries that said they weren't doing anything wrong, nothing harmful, the day that rule went into effect, it was just over a year ago, they moved displays out of the kids section because they knew it was wrong, but they weren't going to do something until someone stood up to them.
Yeah, yeah. Along the same lines, you have been a very vocal advocate for Missouri maintaining a pro-life status as I moved here from California, so to move to a state where I saw how
long ago do we need to test you to see if you're allowed to stay here?
Yeah, 3 years. And to be quite honest with you, I was shocked because if someone were to ask me some of the battles culturally we're fighting now here, if someone would have asked me, would you expect to fight that in California or Missouri? I would have said California. But you know, everywhere there are very real spiritual battles going on, as well as for the future direction of our country. But there has seemed to be, even over this last year, an uprising to try to really switch the Missouri Constitution and the roles in Missouri of allowing abortion rights back into our state. What's your stand on that, and how will you approach that moving into being governor if you're elected?
I believe that as a government official, I should be fighting to protect all life. That's the life of a mother that's going through a difficult time, making sure there are resources so that she knows that her future is bright. But just the same as protecting that mother should be protecting that unborn child, because that is an individual human being. And it irks me so much when people talk about being pro-choice. I said, well, you're not giving the child a choice. And I believe that we're all made in the image of God. And in the Bible, it says, talking about David, that he was wonderfully and fearfully made, that God knew him in the womb. Yeah. And we need to protect life. I wish we could just defeat the abortion amendment to try to enshrine abortion at any time, from conception to the very last toenail the child leaves the birth canal. That would prohibit any regulations designed to protect the health or life of a mother undergoing an abortion. I wish we could defeat that and just focus all our time and effort on making sure that every woman that is pregnant knows that she has a great future. And if there are difficulties because of her pregnancy or because of the timing of it or because of her finances, that the good people of Missouri will come alongside her and say, hey,
yeah,
we'll take care of you. It's going to be great. We're going to make sure that you have a wonderful future mm-hmm. and your child has that same opportunity.
Yeah. And a lot of organizations, a lot of churches are behind pregnancy resource centers, funding those, making those available. This is a question I don't hear asked a lot, but I'm a pastor. I got you here, so I'm going to ask you. I've always envisioned and dreamed of a time where there could be somehow more partnership between churches and government and things like addiction recovery or pro-life centers or faith-based counseling things that really bring hope and proven results to people. Do you foresee any ability for the church and the government of Missouri to partner in certain aspects of what's good for people?
There's some of that going on. We need more of that. One of the biggest concerns about that is when it comes with the criminal justice system. In Missouri right now, when someone is convicted and sent to state prison, when they get out, they on average return 8 or 9 times.
Wow.
Think about the opportunity for faith-based groups that are willing to work with those individuals in the time leading up to their release. So when they're released from prison, they don't just automatically go back to an area where they have no job skills, where they're with the friends that got them in trouble or the drinking buddies that got them in trouble in the first place. Think of how much of a difference it would make for their life if there was a faith-based group that could come alongside, train them, educate them, and get them on a different path when it came time for them to leave that prison. Yeah. Think about the addiction programs. Look, if we just tell people you can just defeat your addiction by yourself, the ability for that to work long term is very low. Mm-hmm. You have organizations like Team Challenge that understand that if you want to change people, you need the Spirit of God to do it. And suddenly they have ranges of rehabilitating people that are above 70%. And they're transforming not just that individual, but that individual's family and future generations. I think it's wonderful for us to have faith-based organizations that are working with the government. We need to make sure that we have strong religious liberty protections so that organizations can do that. You know, look at what's happening in other states where you have, say, a Catholic Charities that's helping to do adoptions, and then they're being told that if they're going to do that, they have to agree with the LGBT lifestyle and all sorts of things that run contrary to their deeply held religious beliefs. We've got to stand against that in Missouri.
Yeah. Fantastic. If I could switch gears really quick. We are not even weeks out from this assassination attempt on former President Trump. How has that potentially impacted your message and what your vision is for the country and for our state? And what do you think that tells us about where we're at as a nation right now?
You know, the scariest thing for me was I don't know where our country would be if he hadn't been able to get back up. I don't even like talking about that. But if that shot had been, I guess it would have been to the right a little bit, I don't know where our country would be. And although we avoided a bullet there, he didn't. It got him in the ear. I am so thankful that he stood back up, that he said, hey, I'm going to keep fighting. And it was a terrible thing that happened. That should never happen in the United States of America. But it could have been so much worse. And the way he handled it, I really think reduced a lot of the tension. And we are in a better place now because he was willing to. I don't know how he thought to handle it that way. I would not have been thinking about it. I'd be like, I'm shot. He was calm, was cool, handled it in an incredible manner. But it is a further illustration of what we've seen before, that we have individuals that are being radicalized by words, by the press, by lies that are put out there. And we've had individuals that wanted to assassinate Supreme Court judges. They just didn't get that far. We had the shooting, I guess it's now several years ago, at the congressional baseball game, or the practice for that. We have got to stand up for the proposition that we need to be able to discuss ideas without demonizing the other side. And when one side is saying that the democracy will be destroyed if Trump is elected, they're saying that Trump is Hitler. I hate to bring up, that just means you've lost the conversation whenever you bring up Nazis or Hitler. So I hate to do that, but that's being done.
Yeah.
When they say that the whole world depends on him being defeated, at some point you say, you know what? That's going to lead to these things. And it's concerning. Really, the only thing that gives me hope is the fact that my hope is not in government.
Yeah.
Because government would foul it up if my hope was there.
Yeah.
And that's so true. And we know that bad ideas lead to bad outcomes. And there are a lot of bad ideas in government. And I think I hear you saying that that's something you want to try to bring some hope and some help to. Speaking of ideas in government, I think Missourians that I've met, both within and without the faith community, are concerned in a lot of their local cities. I know here in St. Joseph, I hear a lot about it, about the increased rate of trafficking and drug trafficking and human trafficking and violent crimes and how even the underlying poverty that seems to be generational has fed into some of that. From a government standpoint, what are your thoughts on things that practically can be done to help tackle some of these issues of crime?
Well, it sounds trite, but when you look at what's happening with immigration, illegal immigration that's bringing over human trafficking, it's some of it for sex trafficking, it's all bad.
Yeah.
You look at the drugs that are coming across the border that are now the number one cause of death for individuals between the ages of 18 and 45 in our state. We have to stop that process. It is not loving to encourage people to go through that process where they're having to pay off the cartels, where the horrific stories that are told about what happens to young women that cross the border by the cartels, what's happening to children, the people that die trying to cross the border. We are enabling them to be worse off by doing that. We need to shut the border. We need to stop the illegal migration across the border, and we need to make sure that when people are coming here, they're coming legally. But what we're doing now with the Biden administration, that is pretty much just saying, "Come on over," we are putting people's lives in jeopardy, and people are losing their lives because of that, and we're enriching China and the cartels at the expense of the people of the United States. Mm. We've got to put a stop to it. You've got to enforce the border, and then you've got to start saying we're not going to subsidize illegal immigrants in the state. And I don't say that to be mean to individuals, but it's tough love. If you truly love them, you've got to cut off this problem and quit this stream of individuals and what they're having to go through to get here and say, no, don't even try to do that. If you're going to come here, come legally or work in your home country to make your country better. Mm.
Are you proposing any items that deal with current illegal immigrants and status moving forward?
Well, I mean, I've talked for years about the need for states to declare an invasion under the United States Constitution, because the federal government has a constitutional duty to protect states from invasion. They're not doing that. I was the first one running for governor to call to send troops to the border. Because if we can actually fortify that border and stop people from trying to make the attempts, think of all the bad and potential harm they're avoiding by not doing that. But I've also talked a lot about the fact that we need to quit incentivizing with your tax dollars for illegal immigrants to be here. Because until we do that, you know, Ronald Reagan said, if you want less of something, you tax it. If you want more of something, you subsidize it. We have anywhere between 75,000 and 80,000 illegal immigrants in this state right now. That's not going to stop as long as we are subsidizing it with your tax dollars. So I've talked a lot about the fact that I am an attorney, along with being an engineer, although I like talking about being an engineer more because people like engineers better. But we need an attorney in that top spot, in the governor spot, that can actually go to the courts. This isn't just about statutes. It's about litigation now. Mm. Actually, I filed a lawsuit against President Biden today or yesterday. And we need someone that can go to the courts and say, no, we're no longer going to quit subsidizing this because we've got to stop this. What's happening to illegal immigrants, yes, they're the first thing they did when they came across the border was commit a crime, but then they're also being further victimized, not only on the way here, but once they're here. That's not right to do to anybody. We should not set up that scenario for anyone.
Yeah, great. Now, you brought up the word taxes, so I'm going to go there. we have personal property taxes. Yep. We have state income tax. There have been various states that have taken
all sorts of taxes. The gas tax just went up again.
Yeah. And
don't
know,
you feel good to pay all those taxes?
Coming from California, no. There's taxes too. I know I was thrown for a loop though the first year I was here trying to figure out my personal property tax and all my stuff. And do you think that's going well? Is there a better way to do this to help Missourians save money? What do you
think? Well, it depends on who you are. If you're the government, you think it's going great because the state budget has virtually doubled in the last 7 years. If you're one of the people that the state government is supposed to be here for, it's terrible. The purpose of government is not to grow at the expense of people. The purpose of government is to create just enough public safety so people can live their lives and make their own decisions. We have to cut government. There are people that say we need to cut personal property tax. There are people that say we need to cut this tax, we need to cut that tax. I don't like any taxes, but what I want to do is I want to get the most amount of money back in the people's hands and leave it there as quickly as possible. So that's why I've decided to go after the individual income tax. Well, various reasons. One, I just don't like the idea of penalizing people for working. I think work is inherently good. Being productive, not just being a bump on the log, but doing something. Two, I hate the idea that when you work, we penalize you by taking some of the money you earned and we incentivize someone else not to work by subsidizing them with that. That just doesn't make sense. But beyond that, if you look at, well, let's compare income tax and personal property tax since you brought those up. Personal property tax is anywhere from $850 million to $1 billion a year. It's a lot of money. Individual income tax is right around 8.2 to 8.5 billion. Now, I don't know about you, but a politician that says, well, I can get rid of 850 million in taxes, I'd say that's a cheap date. I want to get rid of $8.5 billion. Not only because that returns it back to your pocket, not only because of morally it's good to encourage people to work, but you can get rid of the personal property tax without cutting government at all. Some people would say, well, yeah, but then you have to cut government. That's a problem. No, that's a feature, not a bug. I want to cut individual income tax. We can do it in 6, maybe 4, maybe 8 years, depending on exactly how we do that. Return $8.5 billion every year to the people of this state and cut government. Because if you don't cut government, you know what's going to happen with taxes? They will rise. Mm. Either you cut government or eventually you will be paying more.
Yeah.
And the individual income tax doesn't penalize people for working, helps us to get away from incentivizing people for not working. It returns really 10 times as much money to the people, and it requires us to cut government. So I don't like any taxes, but my goal is, one, to get rid of the individual income tax, and number two, to get rid of the 12.5-cent gas tax. The largest tax increase in the history of the state was passed by the legislature in spite of the people of the state turning down a similar tax, what, 3 times over the last 12 years? And they had billions of dollars sitting over here that they didn't know what to do with. So they said, well, we got a lot of extra money. We better tax the people. That's wrong.
Oh, great. Well, finally, there is, I think, probably some good reason why a lot of people seem to lose hope in politicians. They often perceive people who can make big promises, but when they get into the seat, they don't make the hard decisions. Could you close us with just giving us an idea of why you believe you're qualified to make some of these decisions and changes within Missouri? Yeah.
The reason, what I would ask the people of the state is to look at my record. There are a lot of convenient conservatives that are conservative in even-numbered years when the legislative session is over, and then aren't conservative when the legislative session starts back up in odd-numbered years. I've been a consistent conservative. When I ran for Secretary of State in 2016, the number one thing I ran on was election integrity and a government-issued photo ID requirement when we vote. I'm not running on the same thing I ran on when I was Secretary of State because I actually did what I said I would do. We went from being ranked 11th in the country by the Heritage Foundation to being in the top three because we implemented a government-issued photo ID requirement. We outlawed drop boxes. We outlawed Zuckerbucks. We made the paper ballot the official ballot, so we weren't going back and looking at ones and zeros on some sort of flash memory. We were looking at the actual ballot you had. We outlawed ballot curing. And when the United States Department of Justice, and it's okay to boo when somebody says that, when the United States Department of Justice sent federal agents to polling places in 64 jurisdictions in 24 states. Missouri was the first state and one of only two to say no. You're not allowed in there. It's against the law. And if you go into the polling place, I will call the sheriff and his deputies will arrest you and throw you in jail for thinking you're above the law. There's only one person running for this office that has a record of doing what he said he would do and standing up for the people of Missouri. That's why I hope that they'll vote for me on August 6th.
Great. Well, Secretary Ashcroft, thank you for being with me today. And we are praying that God's will is accomplished in this state and in this next election. So thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Well, hey, everybody. Thank you again for joining me on this episode. It means a lot that you take the time to engage in these conversations with us. And if you enjoyed this or you benefited from it, I would just encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, our podcast channel, or just share the link with a friend. Together, we can continue to get the Word of God out into our culture and bring clarity in the midst of chaos and all the confusion going on around us. So God bless you guys. Until next time. See you then.